All right, so this is Thy Kingdom Come, and this again is the law of the tithe, and this will be part four. And just as a reminder, when we're talking about Thy Kingdom Come, you know, we pray that, but really our desire should be to see His kingdom government in force, enacted, and to see His law as the law of the land, see His society as the society we live in. That is His kingdom. So the tithe law is only part of it, but the tithe law is important because that's the funding for the government. That is the funding for the kingdom government. That's how the kingdom government is funded. And I was thinking earlier, well, let me go to our theme verse first. We want to read our theme verse again before we get started in Proverbs 3. And while I'm thinking about it, because we're going to get into the duties of the Levitical priest or of the Levites, the duties of the Levites. And I want to get y'all, I'm going to give you a little bit of an assignment. I want you to make a list of the duties of the Levites. And there's a reason I want you to do that, because I think you'll see the picture before we get through. I don't know if I'll be able to get through this whole section today or if it'll take this and one more setting, but as you make a list of the duties of the Levites, I think you'll see the picture that we need to see to understand what the tithe is all about. But in Proverbs 3, verse 9, it says, "Honor Yahweh from your wealth and from the first of all your produce." And then the promise again, "So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine." So, again, in His law, what I was thinking about, and I started to say earlier, that I was thinking about what the tithe funds. What does the tithe, or the kingdom tax, we could call it the kingdom tax, what does it fund? What does it provide resources for? And that's an important thing. But think about what it does not fund. Think about what the kingdom tax does not fund. Because a lot of what the kingdom tax, in other words, if the kingdom government were what we lived in, we would not see being funded that we do see being funded today under our system of government and our system of taxation. Because remember, we're a democracy. We're a people government. We are God, where we make the rules, we make the laws, and we're God. So we establish taxes, and we say what the taxes will be used for. So what the kingdom government, and this list could be real long, but I wanted to talk about just a couple things real quickly. The welfare system that we looked at last time, in other words, the kingdom welfare system, remember, it promoted responsibility, it promoted individual responsibility, in other words, and accountability, and it provided a way to recover from hard times or hardship for a person. It provided for restoration, right? It provided for restoration. It did not promote perpetual dependence. It did not reward irresponsibility or sloth. But our welfare system does promote sloth, encourages sloth, and promotes perpetual dependency. And our welfare system promotes injustice, and for instance, the prison system, perpetual imprisonment, and so forth, while under Yahweh's kingdom tax system, we would have a system of justice where there's restitution made, and again, there's restoration and healing. In His system, there's restoration and healing. So somebody steals something, they make restitution according to the law, and they go on. So there's restoration and healing. In our system, we have prison systems, we have injustice, we have corruption, we have waste, and there's nothing good in it. And when in Yahweh's system says, "So you'll purge the evil from your midst." Well, we don't ever purge the evil from our midst in our system. It doesn't happen. So there's not healing. There's not restoration. In Yahweh's kingdom society, people are responsible for teaching their own children. Under this system we live in, the state educates the children, and we pay taxes. We pay tribute to pay for it. We pay tribute to pay for the education of other people's children. And they educate the children the way they want to educate them. We don't necessarily even have a whole lot to say about how or what they train them in. They certainly don't train them in kingdom principles or kingdom law. So this is what we're paying for. We're paying for a welfare system which rewards and promotes irresponsibility and sloth or perpetual dependence. We're paying for a government that collects property tax and then confiscates. In many situations, there is confiscation. This government, this lawless government we live under, has confiscatory powers, but in Yahweh's government and His kingdom, there is no confiscation. Big difference. In our system, we have, again, unscriptural military actions and or institutions. In Yahweh's system, the tithe system only covers or provides for a scriptural or a lawful military system, institution, and or military actions, which is self-defense. Self-defense. And I already mentioned the education system. So, and we could go on and on with this list, but that's just a small example. When you compare Yahweh's system, you know, what His tithe provides for compared to what we pay taxes to support today. Well, in talking about what the tithe system pays for, what it funds, you have to look at the Levites because they were the ones who got the work done. The Levites were the servants. They were the civil service corps in kingdom government. The Levites are it. And I want to look at some of that today. But first, I'd like to go to Jeremiah 33. Jeremiah chapter 33, because there's a part in here that I want to bring to your attention if you haven't seen it already. Jeremiah 33 and verse 19 says this, "And the word of Yahweh came to Jeremiah, saying, Thus says Yahweh, if you can break my covenant for the day and my covenant for the night, so that day and night will not be at their appointed time, then my covenant," verse 21, "may also be broken with David, my servant, that he shall not have a son to reign on his throne, and with the Levitical priests, my ministers. As the host of heaven cannot be counted, and the sand of the sea cannot be measured, so I will multiply the descendants of David, my servants, and the Levites who minister to me." Now, in this section, in this entire, really all of Jeremiah, and he deals with the new covenant. Of course, Jeremiah 31 being the new covenant chapter, you know. And this is still along the same vein. And so much we concentrate on David and the Davidic throne and the line of David and that throne being perpetuated throughout history and so forth. And we forget, or I have overlooked, what else is in this very same passage? Because he says in verse 21, he's mentioning my servant David. He'll never lack a son to reign on his throne. And with the Levitical priest, my ministers. The Levitical priest, my ministers. He mentions them specifically. They're the only other tribe mentioned here specifically other than the line of David. So, and then in verse 22, again, the last part of the verse, "So I will multiply the descendants of David my servant and the Levites who minister to me." And when the Levites ministered to the people of Israel, and we're going to look at the different ways they minister to them or serve them, they're ministering to Yahweh. And he says, this is going to go on too. This doesn't end. Now I know that people would say, oh, but the Levitical priesthood is over. The Levitical priesthood is past. We're priests now according to the order of Melchizedek. And that's true. But in kingdom government, somebody has to do the work that the Levitical priest did in the Old Covenant. You don't have kingdom government. You don't have kingdom law and order without people doing this job. You know the old saying, you do what you are. In other words, what's in here comes out. You do what you are. And today, do you think it's possible that there are descendants of the Levites, of Levi, who have in their heart a love for the law, who love the law, they love to read the law, consider the law, they weigh things out by the law, and they just have it in their heart to do that? It's because of what they are, who they are. And what about, you know, the Levites were also the ministers of music. That was their specific duty. We're going to look at some of that. Is it possible that some of these families, you know, that have so much music in their family and music goes for generations in their family, is it possible they could have some blood of Levi in their veins? Sure. And when we see the kingdom in its fullness again, there will be people doing the work that we're going to be looking at that the Levites did back then. It has to still be done. The kingdom can't exist without it. I was mentioning to April and Lael, I heard somebody advertising things they were selling from several worship and praise conferences over several years, and they mentioned their worship dancers. Worship dancers. You know, back when we were young, you never heard of those. I never heard of a worship dancer. But now you hear of them fairly often. It's like there's a restoration. There are people doing it again. Well, the Levites did that. It was part of their job. And there were worship singers and musicians and dancers as part of their duties. So there's a reason these things are coming back, so to speak. But let's look at 1 Chronicles 23. And there's so much in here that... like I say, I don't think I'll be able to get through all the scripture today, and I'm just gonna kind of skip and jump and pick and choose as I go through here. 1 Chronicles 23, let's look at verse 1. Now when David reached old age, he made his son Solomon king over Israel. And he gathered together all the leaders of Israel with the priests and the Levites. And the Levites were numbered from 30 years old and upward, and their number by census of men was 38,000. Of these, 24,000 were to oversee the work of the house of Yahweh. And 6,000, look at this, were officers and judges. And 4,000 were gatekeepers. And 4,000 were praising Yahweh with instruments, which David made for giving praise. Now, have you started your list yet? Has anybody started your list yet? Let's see what could be on the list just in this one passage. 24,000 were to oversee the work of the house of Yahweh. So 24,000 right there given to do the work of the temple or the house of Yahweh. There's one job. Then 6,000 were officers and judges. 4,000 were gatekeepers. What were gatekeepers, by the way? Have you all considered what the gatekeepers are? What really were they? What were they doing there? Just counting people coming in and out? Or they were security. Right. They were security. So you have security. You know, you had judges. And you had officers of the court. Officers of the court to make sure that the judgment's rulings were obeyed and carried out. So, you might call these a bailiff or a police officer, so to speak, or something we might call a police officer, so an officer of the court to make sure that, because think about in the law now, say a man did a crime which was not a capital crime, say he was a thief. If he did not submit himself to the judge's authority and to the ruling of the judge, refused to do what he'd been told to do, what happened to him? Well, he might be committing a capital crime then. And ultimately, if a man refused to do what was ordered, then he had to be put to death. So his crime grew if he didn't submit himself to that. Well, somebody had to make sure he did what he was told to do. So there you have several things, but now all it says as far as praise is in this, in verse 5, says 4,000 were praising Yahweh with instruments, which David had made for giving praise. And David divided them into divisions according to the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So there you have a good beginning. Let's go to verse 24. These were the sons of Levi, according to their fathers' households, even the heads of the fathers' households of those of them who were counted in the number of names by their census, doing the work for the service of the house of Yahweh from 20 years old and upward. For David said, Yahweh, God of Israel, has given rest to his people, and he dwells in Jerusalem forever. And also the Levites will no longer need to carry the tabernacle and all its utensils for its service. For by the last words of David, the sons of Levi were numbered from 20 years old and upward. And their office is to assist the sons of Aaron with the service of the house of Yahweh in the courts and in the chambers and in the purifying of all holy things, even the work of the service of the house of God. And with the showbread and the fine flour for a grain offering and unleavened wafers for what is baked in the pan or what is well mixed and all the measures of volume and size. And they are to stand every morning. Now look, here's a job right here. They are to stand every morning to thank and to praise Yahweh, and likewise at evening. So there's a job in the morning and the evening. They're to thank and give praise. And to offer all burnt offerings to Yahweh. Of course, they did. They made the offerings on the Sabbath, the new moons, and fixed festivals, and the number set by the ordinance concerning them continually before Yahweh. Thus they are to keep charge of the tent of meeting, and charge of the holy place, and charge of the sons of Aaron, their relatives, for the service of the house of Yahweh. Anything and everything that had to do with the house of Yahweh was in their stewardship, their trust. Now I'm going to skip around a little bit because I don't want to read through this whole, I don't want to read the rest of the book, but there's a whole bunch in here. Verse 5 of chapter 24 says, thus they were divided, I want you to notice this, by lot. The one is the other, for they were officers of the sanctuary and officers of God, both from the descendants of Eleazar and the descendants of Ithamar. They drew lots to divide up their work duties. And I'll show it to you some more. In verse 19 it says, these were their offices for their ministry when they came into the house of Yahweh according to the ordinance given them through Aaron their father, just as Yahweh, God of Israel, had commanded them. Look down at verse 31. These also cast lots, just as their relatives, the son of Aaron, in the presence of David the king, Zadok, Ahimelech, and the heads of the father's households of the priest and of the Levites, the head of father's households as well as those of his younger brother. So here again, they're casting lots to divide up the work and the duties. In chapter 25, verse 1, moreover, David and the commanders of the army set apart for services some of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun, who were to look at what they were to do. Now these are Levites. These people are Levites. And they were to prophesy with lyres, harps, and cymbals. And the number of those who performed their service was, and I'm not going to read through all these names, because they ain't no Joes and Georges in here. But look at what their job was, to prophesy with these musical instruments. Now that's interesting, isn't it? I've heard that terminology just recently, but most of my life that would have been a strange concept to me. So, if you look over to verse 6, chapter 25, verse 6, All these were under the direction of their father to sing in the house of Yahweh with cymbals, harps, and lyres for the service of the house of God. Asaph, Jeduthun, and Heman were under the direction of the king. And their number, who were trained in singing to Yahweh, they were trained in singing to Yahweh with their relatives, all who were skillful, was 288. And look at what they did, verse 8. And they cast lots for their duties, all alike, the small as well as the great, the teacher as well as the pupil. They cast lots to divide up their duties. So, and I want you to notice too, I might have read through it and you may have missed in verse 1, chapter 25, verse 1. David and the commanders of the army were picking out some people for these to prophesy with instruments and music, because they knew the importance of having these people go before the army, being with the army. And we're going to see that they also served in the military, the Levites did. Let's see where I want to skip to here. Like I say, I could just read the rest of the book. Let's go to chapter 26. Chapter 26 is about the gatekeepers. In fact, verse 1 says, for the divisions of the gatekeepers, there were of the Korahites, Meshelemiah, the son of Kor, and the sons of Asaph, and it gets down again through all these names. But look at verse 6. Also to his son Shemaiah, sons were born who ruled over the house of their father, for they were mighty men of valor. And that's important. To be a gatekeeper, these needed to be men of courage and men who could be warriors, and they were Levites. Now, you think about, many times you think of the Levites, you think of priests, and in our society, you think of the priest or the preacher, and I think Hollywood has done a lot to promote the concept of the wimpy little preacher. But let me tell you, in the days of kingdom law and kingdom government, the Levites, the servants of the people, will not be wimps. They'll be men who can judge and judge uprightly and not be partial and not be intimidated and coerced. They'll judge uprightly. And the gatekeepers are not right on down the line. These are men of valor. So in verse 6 it says that. Verse 7, it lists off some more whose brothers, Elihu and Semachiah, were valiant men. All these were of the sons of Obed-Edom. They and their sons, their relatives, were able men with strength for the service. For what service? The service of gatekeeping. They were to be gatekeepers. And Meshelemiah had sons and relatives, 18 valiant men. And verse 13, and what do? They cast lots. They cast lots, the small and great alike, according to their father's households, for every gate. They cast lots for the gates and the areas that they would be assigned to. And the lot to the east fell to Shelemiah. Then they cast lots for his son, Zechariah, a counselor with insight. A counselor with insight. And his lot came out to the north. For Obed-Edom, it fell to the south, and to his sons went the storehouse. So the storehouse was in the south, and they also had to guard or keep charge of the storehouse. The storehouse was not unguarded any more than the gates were. For Shuppim and Hosa, it was to the west by the gate of Shalaketh on the ascending highway, guard corresponding to guard. Then on the east there were 6 Levites, on the north 4 daily, on the south 4 daily, and at the storehouse 2 by 2. At the Parbar on the west, there were 4 at the highway and 2 at the Parbar. These were the divisions of the gatekeepers of the sons of Kor and the sons of Merari. So, again, these gatekeepers were Levites, and it's a very serious duty and responsibility. It's security. Did you get that on your list? And these needed to be mighty or valiant men. Let's go to chapter 27. And I'm not going to read this whole chapter, but I want you to notice, especially in verse 5, the third commander of the army for the third month was Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest. Now, if Benaiah was the son of a priest, what was he? Was he of Levi? He was of Levi. And yet, here he was, the third commander of the army for the third month, which they divided him up by the month. Because remember, these were not career military men necessarily. They had other duties. They had other, you know, their families could very well have been farmers, and their time was not always spent. They didn't show up at 8 o'clock every morning to their duty post, you know. They had a certain period of time, like the priest, where they had a time to do this duty, and then other times they were doing other things. So for this third month, this third commander was a Levite. And possibly some of the others were as well, but he was the son of Jehoiada the priest as chief, and in his division there were 24,000. This Benaiah was the mighty man of the 30, and had charge of 30, and over his division was Amizabad, his son. So his son, also of Levi, was a commander. So they could perform military, just plain military duties. All right, let's go to 2 Chronicles, chapter 19. 2 Chronicles 19, verse 8. And in Jerusalem also Jehoshaphat appointed some of the Levites and priests, and some of the heads of the fathers' households of Israel, for the judgment of Yahweh, and to judge disputes among the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So there's another one for the list. So they're judges. Then he charged them, saying, "Thus you shall do in the fear of Yahweh, faithfully and wholeheartedly." In other words, you take this duty seriously, realizing you'll give an account to Yahweh. "And whenever any dispute comes to you from your brethren who live in their cities, between blood and blood, between law and commandment, statutes and ordinances, you shall warn them that they may not be guilty before Yahweh, and wrath may not come on you and on your brethren. Thus you shall do, and you will not be guilty. And behold, Amariah the chief priest will be over you in all that pertains to Yahweh. And Zebediah, the son of Ishmael, the ruler of the house of Judah, he'll be over you in all that pertains to the king." So they've got a division of duties there. One over them regarding all that pertains to Yahweh, that is the law, commandments and so forth. And if it regards the king, then they've got another man responsible for all that. "Also the Levites shall be officers before you." Officers, again, officers of the court. You could say it that way to ensure that the judgments are abided by or enforced. "Act resolutely, and Yahweh be with the upright." So again, these are duties of the Levites. They weren't just priests in the temple. That's part of what we need to see, that they were the civil corps or the civil service corps. They did the things that needed to be done. And Yahweh said, "They minister to me by doing this." Okay, let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy 18. We'll start with verse 1. "The Levitical priests, the whole tribe of Levi, shall have no portion or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat Yahweh's offerings by fire and his portion. And they shall have no inheritance among their countrymen. Yahweh is their inheritance, as he promised them. Now this shall be the priest's due from the people, from those who offer a sacrifice, either an ox or a sheep, of which they shall give to the priest, the shoulder and the two cheeks and the stomach. You shall give him the first fruits of your grain, your new wine, and your oil, and the first shearing of your sheep. For Yahweh your God has chosen him and his sons from all your tribes to stand and serve in the name of Yahweh forever. Now if a Levite comes from any of your towns throughout Israel, where he resides, and comes whenever he desires to the place which Yahweh chooses, then he shall serve in the name of Yahweh his God, like all his fellow Levites who stand there before Yahweh. They shall eat equal portions, except what they receive from the sale of their father's estates. How does King James read there in verse 8?
Have like portions to eat beside that which cometh of the sale of his patrimony.
Okay. Okay. Remember I mentioned before, and I have not remembered to look up a passage and put it in my notes. I'll try to remember to do that. That the Levites, you know, we just read they have no portion. They have no inheritance. They had no perpetual land in their families, but they did own land and they did buy and sell land, and when they move to a new location, which is what this is referring to, he comes to a new place, and maybe he's got something from selling his father's home, because he can sell a home, he can move to another town and buy another home, and they could do that. So I only brought that up so it doesn't, because it did me at first. I thought, well, wait a minute, what inheritance, what estates? I thought they didn't have anything, so to speak. But they did have things. They had homes. They just didn't have that land that couldn't be sold. You know, that's what they didn't have, that had to stay in the family perpetually. So, let's go to chapter 17, back up to chapter 17, and verse 8. If any case is too difficult for you to decide between one kind of homicide or another, between one kind of lawsuit or another, and between one kind of assault or another, being cases of dispute in your courts, then you shall arise and go up to the place which Yahweh your God chooses. So you shall come to the Levitical priest or the judge who is in office in those days, and you shall inquire of them, and they will declare to you the verdict of the case. And you shall do according to the terms of the verdict which they declare to you from the place which Yahweh chooses. And you shall be careful to observe according to all that they teach you. Notice that teaching is one of their duties. According to the terms of the law. In other words, they've got to teach the law. First of all, they've got to know the law, or they can't teach and instruct from it. So one of their jobs, I'd say, is learning the law. They've got to know the law. And another is to teach and instruct from the law. And we'll see that some more. But they issue their verdict according to the law, and then they also have the opportunity to teach and instruct at that time. Verse 11, according to the terms of the law which they teach you, and according to the verdict which they will, or which they tell you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside from the word which they declare to you, to the right or the left. And the man who acts presumptuously by not listening to the priest who stands there to serve Yahweh your God, nor to the judge, that man shall die. Thus you shall purge the evil from Israel. And so this refers to what we were just talking about a minute ago. The officers make sure the judgment is adhered to. Then all the people will hear and be afraid and will not act presumptuously. So a man could start with a very simple crime. Say he stole a man's goat, another man's goat, and he was caught, and there's witnesses, and they've got the witnesses and can show that he stole the goat. He's convicted. Now he's got to make the lawful restitution, which may maybe give the goat back plus five more. Or I'd have to go back and look. I've kind of forgotten already. But it wasn't just give the goat back. It was more than that. And the man could say, okay, judge, I'll do it. And he could go and just not do it. and say to his neighbor, hey, ain't no judges out here. I don't have a goat. I ate him. You know, well, that's capital crime now. Capital punishment. Yeah, I hope you ate well. Might have, yeah. So, again, you see more duties of the Levites here. So this was serious business. Again, it's not just offering up sacrifices at the temple, is it? These are people serving the people of Israel and serving Yahweh by doing so, seeing that justice is done. In Deuteronomy, well, let me look down here. Verse 18. Now it shall come about that when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, talking about a new king coming in, he shall write for himself a copy of this law on a scroll in the presence of whom? The Levitical priest. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear Yahweh his God by carefully observing all the words of this law and these statutes. Whose duty was it to ensure that the king wrote out his copy of the law? That's right. Levitical priest. There's another duty that they had. You think they ever fell short on that duty? It's very, very possible they did. At any rate, there's another job for them. So they had a lot of responsibility, didn't they? They really did. Chapter 31, Deuteronomy 31. You see why the Levites were very important people in society? Very important people. Let's start in chapter 31. Let's start in verse 9. So Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, and to all the elders of Israel. So Moses gave the law to the Levites. The Levites were entrusted with the law to watch it, to take care of it, preserve it, protect it, and they carried the Ark. Then Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the time of the year of remission of debts, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before Yahweh your God at the place which he will choose, you shall read this law in front of all Israel in their hearing. Who was going to read the law to the people every year at the Feast of Booths? That's right. So now, chapter 33. Deuteronomy 33, starting in verse 8, it says, and of Levi he said, let thy Thummim and thy Urim belong to thy godly man, whom thou didst prove at Massah, with whom thou didst contend at the waters of Meribah, who said of his father and his mother, I did not consider them. And he did not acknowledge his brothers, nor did he regard his own sons, for they observed thy word and kept thy covenant. They shall teach thine ordinances to Jacob, and thy law to Israel. They shall put incense before thee, and whole burnt offerings on thine altar. O Lord, bless his substance, O Yahweh, it says, bless his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him, and those who hate him, so that they may not rise again. Now that blessing, this is Moses speaking a blessing of whom? The tribe of Levi. This is the blessing which Moses spoke of the tribe of Levi. And it says, they'll teach your ordinances to Jacob and thy law to Israel. And they're going to be doing the service in the house of Yahweh. Yahweh bless him and accept the work of his hands. So that's a good blessing, isn't it, for the house of Levi? Verse 11. And then he goes, after verse 11 and verse 12, he goes on to Benjamin. But I just wanted to read that, the blessing spoken over Levi. Let's go back to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 17. 2 Chronicles 17 and verse 7. Then in the third year of his reign, he sent his officials, Ben-Hail, Obadiah, Zechariah, Nethanel, and Micaiah to teach in the cities of Judah. And with them the Levites, Shemaiah, Nethaniah, Zebadiah, Asahel, Frank, Tom, and George. And with them, no, but these are Levites. And they taught in Judah. Look at this. Having the book of the law of Yahweh with them. And they went throughout all the cities of Judah and taught among the people. So they were going out to the people. They weren't just having church. They were going out to the people and teaching the law. Wherever the people were, all their towns and communities. I'm sure they went out among, you know, the farming communities. Wherever the people were, wherever they could get a little crowd, and they made sure that they instructed them in the law. Let's go to Nehemiah. Look at some of these things that happened during the time of restoration, as in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, let's go to chapter 8. Nehemiah 8 and verse 9 says, Then Nehemiah, who was the governor, and Ezra the priest and scribe, and the Levites who taught the people, said to all the people, This day is holy to Yahweh your God. Do not mourn or weep. For all the people were weeping when they heard the words of the law. You know, we have so many preachers today preaching so many things. But one of the major things they preach is the law's done away with. And yet, in the days of our fathers, they were under the law of Yahweh. And when they strayed, they had to come back to the law. Nehemiah is one of the times they come back. And we know that when the kingdom is in its fullness again, we'll be under kingdom law again. Why in the world would Yahweh be so confused as to have a period of time in between? He had law here, then no law, and then law again? He's not that confused. And I believe that when our priests, whoever they are, or whatever you want to call them, start preaching the law again, that when our people's eyes are opened and they're brought to repentance, that they'll weep again and say, look at where we've been, look at what we've been doing. Why couldn't we see this? Look at chapter 10. Nehemiah chapter 10, starting in verse 1, and I'm going to pick and choose my way through here. Now on the sealed document were the names of Nehemiah the governor, the son of Hakaliah and Zedekiah, and then here's a bunch of names again. These were the priests. The end of verse 8 says these were the priests, and the Levites, Jeshua the son of Azaniah, Benui, of the sons of Henadad, Kadmiel, also their brothers, and it goes through a long list of names. So, everybody didn't get their names on the list, but these priests did, these Levites did. Why? Because their work was very important. It was very important. Look at let's drop all the way down to verse 28. Now the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, the temple servants, and all those who had separated themselves from the peoples of the lands to the law of God. To come to the law of God, they separated from the peoples of the lands. Their wives, their sons, their daughters, and those who had knowledge and understanding are joining with their kinsmen, their nobles, and are taking on themselves a curse and an oath to walk in Yahweh's law, which was given through Moses, God's servant, and to keep and to observe all the commandments of God, our Lord, and His ordinances and His statutes, and that we will not give our daughters to the peoples of the land, or take their daughters for our sons. As for the peoples of the land who bring wares or any grain on the Sabbath day to sell, we will not buy from them on the Sabbath or a holy day, and we will forego the crops the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. So we also placed ourselves under obligation to contribute yearly 1/3 of a shekel for the service of the house of our Lord. Let me stop here for 1 second, then I'll continue. When it came to not buying or selling on the Sabbath, who do you think closed the gates and made sure nobody got through the gate? The gatekeepers. So it was kind of a law enforcement. Hey, our law is we don't do this on the Sabbath. You're not coming in here. The gatekeepers were the ones at the gate saying, you're not coming in here. Keep your stuff out there. This is the Sabbath day. You'll not violate our law. So, likewise, in verse 34 it says, we cast lots for the supply of the wood among the priests. So people cast lots even to provide the priests with wood. The Levites and the people in order that they might bring it to the house of our God according to our fathers' households at fixed times annually to burn on the altar of Yahweh our God as it is written in the law. And in order that they might bring the first fruits of our ground and the first fruits of all the fruit of every tree to the house of Yahweh annually. And bring to the house of our God the firstborn of our sons and our cattle, and the firstborn of our herds and our flocks, as it is written in the law, for the priests who are ministering in the house of God. We will also bring the first of our dough, our contributions, the fruit of every tree, the new wine, and the oil to the priests at the chambers of the house of our God, and the tithe of our ground to the Levites. For the Levites are they who receive the tithes in all the rural towns. And the priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites receive tithes. By the way, that's another job. They receive the tithes and watch over them. In other words, guard them and have stewardship of them. And the Levites shall bring up the tenth of the tithes to the house of our God, to the chambers of the storehouse. You've already seen that some of the Levites guarded the storehouse. For the sons of Israel and the sons of Levi shall bring the contribution of the grain, the new wine and the oil to the chambers. There are the utensils of the sanctuary, the priests who are ministering, the gatekeepers, and the singers. Thus we will not neglect the house of our Lord. So again, this is during the time of restoration. What they did. Chapter 11, verse 1 says, now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, but the rest of the people cast lots to bring 1 out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9/10 remained in other cities. So the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. That was a privilege and an honor to be one of the people living there. Look at verse 15, chapter 11, verse 15. Now from the Levites, Shemaiah, the son of Hashab, and so on, the son of Buni. Again, they're naming the people of Levi who were among them. And that was the sons of Levi who were in the city of Jerusalem. Look at chapter 12. Verse 1 says, now these are the priests and the Levites who came up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, Sariah, Jeremiah, Ezra, and it goes on and names more. Again, names specifically because they were important. In verse 23 of chapter 11, it says there was a commandment from the king concerning them and a firm regulation for the song leaders day by day. So there were, of Levi, people who were appointed day by day to lead the songs, to lead the praise and worship. In fact, in chapter 12, let's see if I want to read any more of this. I don't guess I will. But again, well, let's see. Let me just skip over. I'll skip all the way to verse 37. And at the fountain gate, they went directly up the steps of the city of David by the stairway of the wall above the house of David to the water gate on the east. The second choir, so I've missed the first choir already. Verse 31 is where it says, I had the leaders of Judah come up on top of the wall, and I appointed two great choirs. The first proceeding to the right on top of the wall toward the refuse gate. And then, of course, down here where I was just reading, the second choir in verse 38 proceeded to the left, while I followed them with half the people on the wall above the tower of furnaces to the broad wall. And so on. And then the two choirs, verse 40, took their stand in the house of God. So did I and half of the officials with me. So on that day, verse 43, they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced because God had given them great joy. Even the women and the children rejoiced. And who was it again? Who was it leading the worship and the rejoicing in the choirs? It was the Levites. There's just so much. I mean, it's hard for me to know where to read and where to stop. But let's go to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 15. And I am almost out of time, so I'm not going to get through this. But next time, I'll just give you a heads up. What I want to do is pull together for you that the duties of the Levitical priest are exactly what Paul said you willingly pay tribute for. If you think about it, wouldn't you willingly pay tribute to have someone doing the job that the Levitical priest or that the Levites do? That's what we're supposed to be paying for. They're the government. They're the government officials. They're the public servants or civil servants, whatever you want to call them. They're the judges and officers of the courts. They're the security. And we do pay for that. They're the ones who make sure that the evil is purged from our midst, make sure that the judge's rulings are enforced, make sure that the evildoers are dealt with, and for the praise of those who do good. How do you praise those who do good? You protect them and uphold their rights. So, we'll pull that together next time. I'll tell you what, hold that thought. We'll go back to 1 Chronicles 15 next time. We'll start there. I'll make myself a mark here this time. I always forget to do that. So I'll know where I stopped. And we'll start in 1 Chronicles 15 next time. And you've got your list going of the duties of the Levites altogether, not just the priests, but all the Levites. So, questions and comments?